breakaway states. Can you think of any? Taiwan, Northern Cyprus, yes. But what about in Europe? I'd never even heard of a few that exist. Life might seem normal in them, but there are issues associated with living in limbo. What's your postcode? But you know yours off by heart. Do you know many others? Probably not. Where we live sort of means something, doesn't it? We live in Australia. We're proud of it. What about if you live somewhere that isn't really regarded as a separate country? It's a bit different, isn't it? Well, there is apparently a strange normality of life in breakaway states. Joining me now from the United Kingdom is Tom Duval. He's a senior fellow at Carnegie Europe, a writer and analyst. Tom Duval, welcome to Counterpoint.
Glad to be with you.
Now, what are these places that exist on maps but are not full nation states? Can you give me some examples?
Yeah, well, I've made a bit of a special study of these places in Europe. There's five or six of them in Europe, but they're all around the world. We're talking about places that are self-governing, fairly stable. People live there, they do their jobs, they go to school, they trade, they do business, but they're not internationally recognized. So they're not members of international organizations. They're not members of the UN. The biggest one is Taiwan, obviously, but I'm talking about some smaller ones in Europe, particularly after the breakup of the Soviet Union. A couple of them have persisted for 25 years, Abkhazia and Transnistria. One was part of Georgia in Soviet times, and one was part of Moldova. And the third one I'm interested in is Northern Cyprus. Turkish Cypriots has been around as a kind of separate de facto state for 40 or 50 years now, but is recognized by no one except Turkey.
Well, obviously I've heard of Taiwan and Northern Cyprus, but the other two are complete surprises to me. Now, you mentioned in the article, this might seem like a small thing, but I thought it was interesting. There's a problem with the postal service not recognizing letters marked to Abkhazia and Transnistria and other places. Is that right? I mean, why doesn't the Postal Service just say, oh yeah, I know where that is, and deliver it? Why do they care if you're recognized as a nation state by other countries?
Well, everything about these places is disputed. It's politicized because there are places, in this case, two recognized states, Georgia and Moldova, and in the case of Cyprus, Republic of Cyprus, which lay claim to these territories. But haven't had any de facto control of them for decades. But it means that they block these territories becoming part of international organizations, taking part in sporting competitions, or even, as we just mentioned, a simple thing like where a letter goes is problematic. You know, is it routed through this place or this place? What do you write at the bottom of the envelope? The Postal Service, there are workarounds, but it gets even more problematic in the digital age when you've got the drop-down box that we'll go to when we're filling out a form on the internet, and there's usually a drop-down box for our country. You click Australia, I click United Kingdom. But if you live in Abkhazia, what are you going to do? There is no category of Abkhazia. They don't want to be part of Georgia, that's what they say, and they don't really want to be part of Russia, even though Russia supports them. So they're kind of stuck.
Yeah. Well, you say Abkhazia and Transnistria have Russia as a patron, Northern Cyprus, Turkey. What about Taiwan? Who's their patron?
Taiwan is a funny one. It's very big. It's very prosperous. It was obviously the recognized United Nations member until Nixon and Kissinger recognized the People's Republic of China. They kind of still have a bit of a patron in the United States, which supports them. And they have worked around a lot of these problems. But on a different scale, they also have the same sort of problems about, you know, diplomats who go there have to give up their diplomatic status. You can't be an ambassador in Taiwan. There are all sorts of issues that they face as well.
Mm. Now, given that they survive quite well, and you say would probably survive without their patrons, although not as well, do they feel somehow disenfranchised not being nation states? Does this make them get carried away with, you know, flags and insignia, and do they overcompensate for not being a nation state by their symbolic gestures?
Yeah, it's very interesting to go and spend time in these places, as I have. And of course, the first thing that you're struck by is that they're a bit exotic. Certainly, they love their flags and their insignia, which don't exist anywhere else. And as you've just said, they kind of overcompensate not being recognized with all this symbolism. But then after a while, you actually find that spending time in Abkhazia and Transnistria is pretty normal. What they don't have is global brands, because the global brands have legal problems being there. So there's no Starbucks, no McDonald's. You might say this is actually an advantage of being an unrecognized state.
It might be.
And also they have kind of funny pseudo brands, like there's a burger joint in Northern Cyprus that looks like Burger King, sounds like Burger King, but they actually call it Burger City. So that's the kind of impression that you have of being there. But I need to be clear here. I'm not saying that these places deserve recognition, that they deserve to be states. They are problematic. They did fight in conflicts. There are many disputes. There are things they've done wrong. So, you know, there are reasons to be cautious with their governments, even though you have to deal with their governments on many issues. What I am saying is that people live there and that those people don't deserve to be penalized because of the non-recognition of these places. That just because someone happens to live in a non-recognized state like Abkhazia or Northern Cyprus shouldn't mean that they don't have the same rights to travel or higher education or even trade that people in a recognized state has. And I think that's problematic, that ordinary people are being held hostage by these political disputes.
So do these European ones issue passports?
They do, but you know, they're not recognized. So that, again, for example, if you're in Abkhazia, the main way nowadays you travel abroad is by getting yourself the passport of Russia, which is a neighbor and patron, but is not your country. So you're kind of basically pretending to be a citizen of another country.
Mm.
And a few generations ago, it was much easier. The United Nations used to dish out passports. There's some fairly good reasons, you know, passport allocation is much more standardized. But I think there are workarounds on a lot of these issues. And I guess in this article I've written and this longer paper I've done as well, I'm just saying that we need to take another look at these places. One, because I think the people there have rights. They shouldn't be second-class human beings. And two, I believe that actually if you take these places a bit more seriously, you might actually get a bit more traction on the conflicts that they're involved in. You might start moving them a bit more further down the road.
Mm. I'm talking with Tom Duval, Senior Fellow at Carnegie Europe, and we're talking about the strange normality of life in states that aren't really recognised as states. Tom, what about kids who go to university? These places presumably have universities. Are their degrees recognised in other places if their passports aren't?
This one's a real headache and quite a challenge. I spent time in three different universities, one in Abkhazia, one in Transnistria, and one in Northern Cyprus. Every case is different. The ones in Abkhazia and Transnistria are pretty sad places. A lot of the staff in their 60s and 70s have not retired. Younger people are not getting a look in. Some quite bright students with some fairly good English, actually, but really very underfunded places. And you've got a whole generation, you know, of students who really want to go somewhere and are having problems. Totally different situation in Northern Cyprus, which has this kind of little mushrooming of higher education colleges, some of them of quite varying quality, but one or two of them are really quite good universities. So they've been much more entrepreneurial. They've done deals with universities around the world, and they're getting around the problem that way. They're also part of the Turkish education system. But just spending time in these places, you realize that every single issue is a challenge, a problem. You know, just doing a university deal, signing a contract, making a bank transfer, all of these issues have to be sorted out on a daily basis because you're living in a non-recognized state.
It's a difficult life. But if you walk down the street, will it be like walking down the street in a lot of cities, varying in size, of course, but, you know, cafes with people happily having a coffee and watching the world go by? Do people, other than these problems, lead a fairly normal life?
Yeah, within these states, day to day, the problems I'm describing are basically problems when it comes to dealing with the outside world. There are international problems. But if you're in these places, it's very interesting. You know, people lead pretty normal lives. But actually, most places don't really want to be rogue states. They don't really want to be outside the international order. And so even though they're not recognized, they have parliaments, they have elections, you know, they have traffic police, they have traffic lights, and if you crash the red light, you get fined. And it's interesting that they kind of aspire to this kind of respectability. And I ask myself, spending time in these places, well, you know, they don't have to do this. Why do they do this? No one's paying much attention to them. But I think people, they want to have the kind of security and stability of living in a state. And it doesn't really matter to them if that state is internationally recognized or not. I think it seems to be a basic human need to have some kind of structure and some kind of predictability in your life. So it's interesting, these places actually build states of their own accord, even though no one is recognizing them.
Mm. What about the health system? I mean, you mentioned that the universities have aging staff. It just occurs to me with hospitals, you need specialists coming on, and there's new research around the world all the time. It sort of invites me to conclude the health opportunities there might not be that great.
Yeah, absolutely. The health systems in all of these places are pretty poor, pretty decaying. You know, they don't get investment and they're not getting the latest technology. You know, that they get something usually from Russia in one case or from Turkey in another. But they're basically, you know, cut off from most of what's going on in the outside world, and they're quite left behind. That's absolutely true, even though in a couple of cases they're right in the middle of Europe.
Now, we have UN committees on just about everything. Is there a UN committee that looks at the problems of these breakaway states?
Well, I mean, the UN looks at the conflicts associated with these states, but, you know, the UN is a club of recognized states, so they're not terribly favorably disposed towards non-recognized breakaway places just by the nature of the organization that they are. I think there's an acceptance that, you know, these disputes have to be settled peacefully, but otherwise we're pretty stuck with these places, that they're not going to collapse and they're not going to be recognized. They just seem to be kind of continuing into the distance.
Well, Tom, you've given me another reason to thank heavens I was born in Australia. You must think of kids in these places. It's not their fault. They're born to a place that has an inadequate health system, university systems that aren't as good as they should be. And a lot of us don't think much about these breakaway states. So thanks very much for joining us and bringing it all to our attention. Tom Duval, I hope we talk again.
Thanks so much.